Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Merritt Island, Florida, and was the ninth pick by the Kansas City Royals in the 1975 baseball draft. After a 10-year Major League Baseball career, he spent 15 years in the Colorado Rockies organization. Since 2010, he's been the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's also the national spokesperson for Prader-Willi syndrome. Famous for his thoughts of the day, his name, Clint Hurdle. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Clint Hurdle, the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Clint, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Jack, thank you. It's good to be on your show.
Can we start by talking about your mom and your dad and your childhood, please?
Well, my mom and my dad, they've been with me through all the tough times from birth until now. That's what I remind them of every anniversary. They're doing well, living over on the East Coast. We just helped my mother celebrate her 80th birthday. We had a surprise birthday party for her 2 weeks ago. Actually, it was 6 weeks after her birthday, so that's always a surprise. But they're doing well. They were always available. They always buttonholed the importance of education with sports. They were representative of the entire family unit, being cohesive. I have two sisters, both younger. They had things to do, things we needed to attend. Probably more attention than I would have liked came my way. My sisters would definitely echo those thoughts growing up. But it's a family that's close for all the right reasons to this day. My mom and dad provided me with more than I should have gotten. They both worked hard to make ends meet. We didn't have too much of anything. We had enough of everything. And to this day, they follow me, and they're my biggest supporters. My mother, every time we're on the phone, will finish the conversation with, "Give it everything you got." I'm 58 years old, and that hasn't changed. My dad still supports at the park, from at home, on the phone or radio. So I'm a blessed man.
You were a terrific athlete in high school, and you were accepted at Harvard, but you chose a baseball career. Why?
Passion. Passion for the game. I grew up playing the game, but just as importantly, I grew up a student of the game. I read books. I didn't just listen to the radio. I did that as well. I listened to Ernie Harwell as a kid in the summertime in Michigan. The Tigers, second favorite team right now, the Pirates being my first favorite team. But the Tigers were the old English D on the front of the uniform, making the family trip once a year from Big Rapids to Detroit. My dad was strategically get us tickets for a Yankee series. He was a big Yankee fan. He and my dad, my grandfather, loved the Yankees so much I couldn't stand them. I loved the Tigers. And I read sports books. I wanted to know why. I wanted to know how. I wanted to know more. So education was important. I had worked very hard in school and put myself in a position for some options, whether it was an academic scholarship at Harvard. I had signed a letter of intent with the University of Miami in Florida on a football-baseball scholarship, which was somewhat unheard of at the time, dual sports, duality of sports, and then was drafted in the first round, the ninth pick by the Royals. And my folks were open-minded. There wasn't I had to do anything other than what I felt led to do, and we were all more than comfortable with the decision to engage on that dream that I'd had since I was five, playing wiffle ball in the backyard of being a big league ball player.
September 18th, 1977, you're 20 years old, and you debut in the major leagues against Glenn Abbott, Seattle, and you homer for Kansas City in your second at-bat. When you put your head on the pillow that night, Clint Hurdle, what did you think?
Oh, my goodness. I felt like I was 6 years old again. It was, again, a dream that had was born in a backyard and that was carried through Little League fields, Babe Ruth fields, high school fields, minor league travel, many sacrifices made along the way, many people to be grateful for and thankful for in helping the journey along. And that night, just like, you know, every night you put your head down, but that night it was a little different. The body felt a little lighter. There was some sense of accomplishment that the first part of the dream had been taken care of, that I did play a major league game. The fact that I hit a home run was kind of crazy. But the fact that all that hard work and sacrifice by so many people had gotten us to a very exciting place.
The cover of Sports Illustrated on March 20th, 1978, almost 38 years ago to the day, had you, and it was this year's phenom. And your roommate was George Brett, who threw you out because you raised too much hell. Those early years. Talk about those early years.
I had nothing to do with the cover of Sports Illustrated. That wasn't my choice. It was a cover that Sports Illustrated had done for a few years that would grab a minor league player and put him on the cover, somebody they thought would pop, would be a big hit as a player. And it's amazing, if you look back all the guys in the cover, I'm not sure how many they got right. So it was kind of funny from that aspect. A lot of expectation. I think in many ways, George was looking out for me, bringing me into the house, and there was a lot going on. And I wasn't even old enough to drink in Kansas City the year I was up there, so I was trying to find my nocturnal activities in other areas. But yeah, just never went to college, and probably part of me was trying to figure out some things socially. But for the biggest part, probably misalignment of my priorities.
We're talking to Clint Hurdle, who played 10 years in the major leagues for the Royals, the Reds, the Mets, and the Cardinals. When we come back, we'll ask him about the 1980 World Series. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Clint Hurdle. Clint, let's go back to 1980. You hit .294, and you make the World Series. Talk about that experience.
Wow. I was fortunate to play on a fantastic team. Jimmy Fry was our manager. It was his first year as a manager. He'd been a first base coach for the Orioles. I'd gotten to know him a little bit just from playing against the team, having conversation with him. A very gifted team, good coaching staff, a lot of guys with one common goal on being the best team we could be, a lot of unselfishness. Dennis Leonard and Paul Splitoff, Larry Gura led the rotation. We had a very strong bullpen. Dan Quisenberry was our closer. A number of guys pitching in front of him that were very, very good. And then we had Willie Mays Akins at first, Frank White at second. UL Washington played short. George was at third. Daryl Porter caught. And there was Willie Wilson and myself in the outfield along with Amos Otis. That, again, is another culmination of a lifetime dream. I mean, I can remember my folks going to Philly to meet us there for game one, bringing them down on the field to get our picture taken together. Just a priceless memory. Playing at the old Vet Stadium with 70,000 people for games one and two and six. Going back home to Kansas City and playing in front of our packed house in the World Series. Just fantastic stuff.
You played 10 years, and then You catch on eventually with the Colorado Rockies. And in 1997, a man named Kelly McGregor changes your life. How?
Kelly, I was fortunate to have a few men in my life at that time, none more timely than Kelly McGregor. Kelly modeled the behavior that he wanted to instill in others. You felt good when you were around Kelly. Kelly made you feel good. Kelly inspired you. Kelly challenged you. Kelly helped you grow up. I knew I could trust Kelly. I knew that he could make me better, and I knew he cared about me. And those are three questions that I think any time we can get those three questions answered in life, whether it be in a relationship, whether it be within a corporation, the business world, or a team concept, a sport, when trust is involved, great things can happen. When you know people care about you on and off the field, you're going to have every opportunity to be confident, to have self-esteem, to make a difference in the lives of others. And when you know you're around people that can make you better, that challenge you to be better, to get a little bit better at something every day. Kelly did all that. He also was very steadfast with our faith particle, our Christianity that we both shared, and challenged me to become a more avid reader, a more avid studier, to spend more time, and to be a man of commitment and dependability, and really develop a servant's heart.
You and your wife, Carla, were blessed with a daughter, Maddie, and you said that Maddie gave you your epiphany. Please.
We, like many others, are the parents of a special needs child. This is not something that I don't think anybody's ever raised their hand to get in the front of the line for. It's hard when the initial diagnosis is made and we got taken into a room, walked a hallway, you might see in the movies, and the doctor said, I got some hard news to share with you, and then you're told that you have a daughter with a birth defect, and you find out the birth defects, they don't go away. There's no recordable cure in the history of man. Now, there's a lot of birth defects we're trying to figure out ways to solve and to cure, but hasn't happened so far. And you've got to kind of rearrange all the furniture in your house, mentally, physically, spiritually. And we both decided that we were going to, this was going to galvanize us. It wasn't going to break us up. We're going to need each other to get through it. We're going to need each other to be the best persons we could be for one another and for Maddie. And the servant's heart concept, mindset, got put into place immediately, because not only from our perspective, but as we found out, there's so many people in our lives willing to help us raise our daughter, or to help our daughter become better, whether it be occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy, that cared about Maddie for Maddie, not because her daddy managed the Colorado Rockies. Just daily lessons taught in patience and encourage, because many times it takes tremendous courage to show patience, to have patience, to not get frustrated when you're not getting the answers you want or you're not getting any answers at all, but to trust and believe in something far bigger than yourself. And that for us was God's plan for our life, and Maddie was a part of it, and that wasn't going to change.
It struck me how many times I've had a guest that's had a special needs child, and they refer to that child as their hero, their angel, their inspiration, their teacher. Clint, why is that?
You know, my opinion only. I believe there are certain things that God doesn't want us to figure out. I believe that through special needs children, he can show us the rawness of life, the innocence of life, the essentials, the bare-knuckled day-to-day living, finding a way for little victories. Maddie's doing things now at the age of 13 we didn't know she'd be able to do when she was 8. There's things we still don't know she's got any shot at. What we've done is slow that train down and just take it one day at a time. There's still days that are hard, Jack, very hard. Through those hard days, you've got to find a way to rise above it. And having a brother, Christian's 11, there's days where, you know, things that he's said, and I know he means them in his own way, that things aren't fair. They're hard. And it can't be all about Maddie. We've got to find time for Christian. Christian deserves a quality of life that's special and significant as well. The lessons we learn from Maddie, though, I mean, they're about unselfishness. They're about unconditional love, and it's a term that's thrown around a lot, used a lot. I think for those of us in the family of having special needs children, our definition might be different than somebody that doesn't have a special needs child, of understanding unconditional love. They're yours. This is how God made them. There's lessons to be learned. There's tasks to be performed. I mean, it's biblical, of the washing of feet. There's times that we've got to take care of Maddie in a way that, you know, you shouldn't. That she's 13, you shouldn't have to do that. Well, you know what? We do. And we're going to, do it not as a burden, but an act of love. And it's not easy. I'm blessed with a wonderful woman in my life, Carla, who's got the heart of a whole bunch of people. And she has patience and courage and understanding that's significant. So Maddie has taken us on many life lessons, and I'm sure there's more. And there's some of the funniest things that have happened in our family have been a result of Maddie saying something, doing something, acting some way. It happens frequently, and we're blessed by it.
We're talking to Clint Hurdle, who's beginning his 41st year in professional baseball. Clint, you were the manager of the Colorado Rockies from 2002 through 2009, and you led them to the World Series in 2007. What's the difference being in the World Series as a player and then as a manager?
Oh, it's crazy different. And I've also been fortunate enough to have been in the World Series as a coach, 2010 with the Rangers. So I don't think that's a large group of people that have been in as a player, coach, and manager. And I think we can shrink it by saying that I've also finished second three times, have not been on a World Series winning team as of yet. The fourth time will be a charm in Pittsburgh. As a player, it's, you know, there's enough of it that's about you. Yes, you're committed to the team, and yes, it's special. However, you're looking at making sure that you're prepared, you're taking care of yourself. If you can lend a helping hand, you do. You're pulling for one another. You also want to make all the plays you need to make. You want to not put your team in jeopardy. You want to have productive at-bats. You know, it's more individual with a team concept in mind. And from a managerial standpoint, it's all about everybody else. It's about everybody else. Making sure you've gotten your coaches the information they need, making sure you're giving the freedom to work the way they need to work, giving your players the freedom to play, trusting them, managing the game as it develops, not forcing the issue. So just a lot of fun. And I think from the managerial aspect, it's kind of like watching your kids out playing in the backyard. You're watching them have the time of their life, playing their hearts out for one another and with one common goal, and that's to get to the game and to win the game. And then unfortunately, you know, like I said, we have not pulled that off in three different venues, so we'll continue to find a way and try and pull that one off here in Pittsburgh.
We're talking to Clint Hurdle, who in 2013 was named National League Manager of the Year. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Clint Hurdle, who has turned the Pittsburgh Pirates into perennial winners on a shoestring budget. Clint, this is your 15th year of being manager. Who's the best manager you ever played for and why?
Oh, that's a hard question, Jack. You know, I don't know if I had a best. I've been fortunate to play for some very good men. My first manager in pro ball, I remember like it was yesterday, was Gary Blaylock. And Gary taught me lessons I never forgot. I've been fortunate to play for Whitey Herzog, Davey Johnson, Johnny McNamara, coach for Don Baylor, Jimmy Leland, Buddy Bell. Just been fortunate around the block. Player perspective, late in my career, Davey Johnson impacted me dramatically. It was a hard spot for me where I was at. Been in the big leagues, fighting, gone down the Myers, fighting my way back, and developed a relationship with Davey that was significant in a lot of different ways. You know, he answered those three questions. I could trust him, he could make me better, and he cared about me. But I did learn good things. Jimmy Fry, I learned some tremendous things from playing for him in Kansas City as well. So I do believe we're prepared for our future through our past if we've paid attention. And I believe there was enough good men in my life and I was able to pay enough attention. I learned some very valuable lessons along the way.
I was blessed to get to know Earl Weaver, the late, great Baltimore Oriole, who had great, great lines. And one time he said to Pat Kelly, a pious outfielder, after Kelly whiffed with the bases loaded, and said to an angry Weaver, "Earl, I hope you walk with the Lord one day." Weaver snapped back, "Pat, I hope you walked with the bases loaded one day." You've heard a lot of great lines. What's the best line you've ever heard?
Oh, George Brett, opening day, Cleveland, 70,000. Looked me in the eye, said, "I hope we get 5 hits today." And I was like, "Wow, that's impressive. You know, that sounds great." I go, "Yeah, like me too." He goes, "I'll get 4, you get 1. That was pretty good. That lightened the mood. The second best line I heard, I was standing on the opening day lineup. We weren't in the lineup, Howard Johnson and I at Shea Stadium. And they started playing the national anthem. And Howard looked at me and goes, "I hate this song." I'd never heard anybody say that. "Joe Howard, what? What?" He goes, "I hate this song." I go, "Why is that?" He goes, "Every time I hear it, I have a bad game." Both of those made me laugh hard.
So, one of your heroes is the late, great John Wooden. What made him so special?
Oh, my goodness. We could go on and on and on. Integrity, character. His actions matched his words. He had a servant's heart. Everybody talked about the championships. Nobody realized how many years they didn't win in UCLA. And he remained steadfast and dedicated to his task and his people. Coaches players up on and off the field. The pyramid of success is timeless. It's applicable today in any sports team or any corporation, corporate America, as it was when he came up with it. He learned so much from his father. I think in a kindred spirit kind of way, he was probably one of the original disciples. Fantastic guy that I continue to learn from today.
Bum Phillips, the Houston Oilers head coach, once said about Don Shula that he's so good he can take Theron and beat Usson on Sunday, and then on Thursday take Usson and beat Theron. What made Shula so good, Clint?
Well, I watched him coach, but at a very young age, with no depth of coaching that hopefully I have now. I do believe elite coaches have the ability to make men reach and strive for greatness. It's not about being okay. It's not about even winning. It's about being the best you can be and doing it every day and being selfless in it. You know, there's two kinds of people in this game, those that are humble and those that are about to be. I do believe Shula shared that frequently with his team, that, you know, you keep your eyes on the prize. You keep moving forward. You learn from the lessons, from the losses. That, you know, failure is an event. It's not a person. We all have abilities to get better. And I think in listening to the players that played for Shula, you know, they all trusted him. They all knew he cared about them. At the end of the day, they all knew he could make them better, the coaches as well.
Lou Holtz, he did it 6 times, 6 different college teams. How and why?
Well, he has a game plan. You know, he's etched it out. I've heard him speak. I've YouTubed a bunch of things from Lou, and I've actually known some players, some people that have played for Lou. And it does go back to core principles, core values, non-negotiables, collective excellence, relentless drive, consistency, being the best person you can be. You know, sport is an individual responsibility, always aimed at collective gain. Lou's core principles touch on the ones that I've talked about. I mean, I've read them, and he lives them. I think that as much as anything, that words can be hollow. If your actions don't match your words, you're just making noise. Nobody's attracted to noise. People are looking for difference makers. People are looking for people to look up to and heroes. People, more often than not, are looking for someone they can depend upon. I mean, dependability, for me, I share this with our team repeatedly, that your greatest ability will be your dependability. And Lou Holtz's dependability has shown up throughout his coaching career and even today.
We're talking to Clint Hurdle, the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Clint, you've said a lot of things outside the box through your life, but I quote you now. Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz was one of the all-time leaders. How?
funny story. I'm watching The Wizard of Oz for the 571st time with my kids. And at a particular point in time in the movie, I look to my wife, I go, I get it. This is incredible. And she looks me in the eye and goes, Clint, it goes from black and white to color every time. You know, just stay with it. And I'm like, no. I said, this whole movie, this is all about leadership. And she's like, okay. I really got to hear this out because I don't get it. And I said, here's a woman that shows up, is put in a position that she didn't ask for. She's far away from home. She's in a foreign place. She's confused. She's bewildered. She has no one to look for any help. She does have her dog. She has a companion. But she's got to figure out how to get back home. And through the casting of characters, she runs into a scarecrow who doesn't have a brain, a tin man who doesn't have a heart, and a cowardly lion doesn't have any courage. Each one of these men are lacking in something significant. Through the course of their adventure, they get to their final destination, and more disappointment, yet she turns a disappointment into victory by having these men look within inside themselves, and they found they had what they needed all along within. She sacrifices all. She was on a mission. When you're on a mission, you don't count cost, and you don't count sacrifice. So for me, that movie in and of itself, I still have a small painting of Dorothy and the lion and the Tin Man and the scarecrow behind my desk in Pittsburgh to remind me of her leadership qualities every day.
Talk to us, Clint, if you will, about how a manager is a servant leader.
Truthfully, this is not something I probably had in my back pocket when I started my managerial career at the age of 30. It was more being a baseball manager. Over time, Kelly McGregor played an important role. My relationship with Christ played an important role. True, powerful, strong leadership is transformational, where it's not about your agenda. It's about you serving others and giving them the opportunity to be the best person they can be and making their jobs easier. Jesus Christ was a transformational leader. There's been many others that I read about and I keep in place. Abraham Lincoln, Helen Keller, Gandhi, Harry Truman, Teddy Roosevelt. So many that when the day begins, it's what can I do for you? How can I help you? Whether it's serving their country, serving a team, serving your family, it was never about them. So for me, my job is to let these players know that I'm more or less a GPS. They need a North Star. I need to be the North Star. I need to be the person they can depend upon when things aren't good. Things are going good. They're going to be in a good place. They're going to play the game. They're going to be fine. When things get a little twisted, when the dots don't connect, that's when I've got to show up and be at my best to serve them with a reminder. Sometimes it's a pat on the back. Sometimes a smack on the backside, Jack. 3-foot difference, but both are appropriate when your timing's right. For me, it just makes all the sense in the world to be a transformational leader, somebody that can be seen through, that's transparent, that doesn't have their own agenda in front of everyone else's.
We're talking to Clint Hurdle, manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, who's famous for his thoughts of the day. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Clint Hurdle, who's famous since 2009 for his thoughts of the day. Clint, how did they start, and what are they?
They started in 2009. Kelly McGregor and I were trying to come up with a little spinoff from our Bible study that we would have in the morning to not just be the spiritual lesson of the day, but a daily encouragement. It could be business. It could be relational in the home. Anything. All topics were open. And the number of people that I was reaching out to and share it with was 12 or 13. I did it for a couple months into the season, and then I got fired. And I can remember working through being fired for the first time, having a summer off, and I just stopped doing it, absolutely stopped. I mean, boom, done. And about 2 weeks down the road, I got a reply from one of the people on the list, a female account executive in Colorado. She goes, "Clint, I'm confused. I know you got fired. I also know how impactful these lessons we were learning together and the time spent and how much they made, how much I looked forward to them, the difference they were making in my life, how much I was learning." She goes, "And at the bottom, you would always write, 'Make a difference today, love Clint.'" And she said, "If you truly meant that, why would you stop doing them?" And I can remember biting my tongue thinking, starting to think, she does it. And I just said, "Stop. This is just what I needed to hear. Why would I stop? Because I don't have the same position I have? Was it all about position, or is it truly about serving others?" And it was a great slap in the face for me. And I picked it back up. And it went from a text message concept to an email concept. The number's grown. The number's up over 3,000 now, I believe. I don't have an exact number. I don't tie it down every day. But it goes out daily to offer some encouragement. Every one of them strikes me in a powerful way. I don't pick them for other people. I don't look at one and say, "Jack needs to hear this today." It's all about me trying to learn something and better myself. And then hopefully with the 3,000 people, there'll be a handful that will resonate with as well. And it has been amazing, the responses I get, the thanks I get, and what it has done for me as far as learning and truly serving others and being responsible and accountable for something that's making a difference in the lives of others is rewarding beyond measure.
On November 7th, 2015, the thought of the day was teaching a son how to become a man. Can you share that one with us?
Well, I've been fortunate that my father and I have had a wonderful relationship. My dad came from a different generation. Men showed up. They went to work. His father's another different generation. They each expressed their love and their care for their families in different ways. I think my grandfather's generation, you knew he loved you, and that was about the extent of it. I don't remember him ever telling me he loved me. I don't remember hearing him tell his son, my dad, that he loved him. But we knew he loved us, and we were with him in his passing days. I've been with him throughout, his living days. So I love my grandfather. I've done anything for my grandfather. He was proud of me. We spent great times together, but there was a disconnect. And then my relationship with my father has evolved to the fact that we may have taken my playing career for granted, because when you did well, you were supposed to. When you didn't do well, there was a problem. And it's developed over the years into we take advantage of every situation. We love every day. And I don't remember him telling me a lot that he loved me early, but now he tells me he loves me all the time. You know, my son and I mean, I've been telling him I love him since the day he could hear me. I still kiss my son. He's 11. And it's just about encouraging him to follow his dream and his passion. My son doesn't play ball. Plays the violin, karate, hip-hop dance. He paints, he colors, he sings. Plays a little tennis. And I'm good with all of it. He needs to be Christian. He needs to be the best Christian he can be, and I need to honor that and support that. So for us, that's what it has become about, in helping him grow up to be a man. And also there's times right now that I just need to leave him alone, let him be 11.
At the end of the 2010 season, two teams offered you a managerial position, the Mets and the Pirates. The Pirates had never finished above 500 since 1992. And you choose the Pirates, and now you and your staff have turned this perennial loser into a perennial contender. How?
Well, there's a bunch of people involved. And I was still in the interview process with the Mets. I think I was down to a small number of people in the mix. I had some very candid conversations with Sandy, but Sandy, I learned a lot from Sandy in a short period of time. Very rarely do you get a man that's got a Harvard degree and was a U.S. Marine. Sharp guy. I had been in the Mets organization as well for 9 years, so there was a tie in there. For whatever reason, I kept going back home telling my wife, this is crazy. I'm drawn to Pittsburgh. They want me in their dugout. They value my experience. They've got a lot of new things in place. They're making progress. There's so much good work has been done. Unfortunately, none of it at the major league level right now. I basically looked my wife in the eye and I said, you know, it's bound to get better. It's been 18 consecutive losing seasons. That can't go on. They're due. Unfortunately, we threw up two more losing seasons to run a total of 20. However, the commitment level of the people in place, from Bob Nutting to Frank Coonley to Neil Huntington to Kyle Stark and Greg Smith, I felt polarized to. These were like-minded men. They reminded me of Kelly in Colorado and Dan O'Dowd, my GM there, two men that I learned so much from. And that Pittsburgh was such a no-nonsense town, blue-collar, roll your sleeves up, go to work, do your job, play hard, have fun, have pride, and passion for what you do. So I just couldn't turn my back on the opportunity. I felt it was the greatest coaching opportunity in sport at the time.
As our time winds down together, Clint, what advice would you give to our young listeners this evening?
Use your ears and your eyes. Go to school. There's a different way for everybody to find their own way. But follow your heart. What makes your heart beat? What you're passionate about. Love on the people that are around you. And don't let a day go by without being thankful for something.
Clint Hurdle, as we embark on the 2016 baseball season, God bless to you and your team, and thanks a million.
Jack, thank you so much.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.
Believe in yourself.